Welcome to the Devin Nunes Podcast. Breaking through the political noise, separating fact from fiction. From the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of the solar system. Here is your host, Devin Nunes.
Welcome back to the Devin Nunes Podcast. We are coming to you via podcast on iTunes, Spotify, et cetera, et cetera. Also now exclusively on Rumble. So if you're watching this, you're watching it on Rumble. This week, we're going to have the Roger Kimball week. He is the president CEO of both Encounter Books, a nonprofit. Full disclosure here, my book is going to be coming out on Encounter Books. And we're going to talk a little bit about that and how I decided to do that on Friday. But Roger is also the CEO of the New Criterion. And so, Roger, welcome to the podcast. And I'm always trying to bring my viewers and listeners people that you can trust, people that are out there that do good quality work that's either, you know, and it doesn't have to be always conservative. It can be center to center right. But clearly, I have this huge concern about how corrupt the national media has become and also how corrupt the social media companies have become and how they're poisoning the American people. So what I'm trying to do is build over the course of the next couple months kind of a personal hygiene test that people can take in terms of, what are you using for social media? What are you using for your search engine? And what sites are you going directly to? And clearly, New Criterion is a site that I would recommend. You have great writers there. So, Roger, welcome to the podcast. And if you could walk us through, what is the New Criterion? What does it mean? How did you get involved?
Hey, well, the New Criterion was started almost 40 years ago. I can hardly believe it myself. Not by me, but by Hilton Kramer, who at that time was the chief art critic of the New York Times, which used to be a newspaper in New York. And he could see the writing on the wall. He could see the drift of the ideological drift of the paper and decided to leave and start a magazine that would be serious, but not academic. And he took the name of the magazine from T.S. Eliot's magazine, which ran from 1922 to 1939, The Criterion, and it was the place where Eliot's famous poem, The Wasteland, was first published. It was one of the most distinguished literary magazines of the 20th century, and Hilton decided that this was a good time to try to reintroduce a current of seriousness about culture, because he understood, as people say, that politics is always downstream from culture. If you lose the culture, you've lost your political soul as well. And so here we are coming up on our 40th anniversary in just a year or so. And when I took over from Hilton, I've been writing for the magazine since 1983. I can hardly believe it. But we have tried to carry on that legacy. The magazine looks almost indistinguishable from the way it looked back in 1982. Here's a recent issue, which you're your viewers, those of you who are watching, can see. You can find us on newcriterion.com. You'll find many important writers, Andy McCarthy, Conrad Black. It's a long, long list of important and, more to the point, very vibrant writers. People.
And so the New Criterion, you print it and you mail it to people's homes. Yes. Is that once a month?
It's a monthly, but we go into a state of estivation. We take a summer vacation in July and August, so it's 10 times a year. But the magazine, although it looks almost identical to the way it looked in 1982, has actually grown a huge amount. Our circulation is bigger than ever, and we have a very vibrant web presence. So there's a lot of web-only material. And so I do recommend that people not only subscribe, but also go to our website, because you'll find all throughout the summer and all throughout the year, many articles and much commentary that is web exclusive.
And there's no difference really between, obviously there's more web exclusive information, but obviously if you get the magazine in the mail, you have to pay for that subscription.
Yes.
But in
yes.
terms of the New Criterion website, Is that accessible to and open to everyone,
well,
or is there a subscription service there?
Anybody can log on to the website. There's a lot of material that is free, including a weekly newsletter. But some of the articles you must subscribe to get or pay for them individually. But it's a modest cost. And I think, you know, it costs about $70,000 a year now to go to one of the top colleges or universities. And it costs $48 a year to subscribe to the new Criterion. I think anyone who can do math can see which is the better bargain.
$48, and that, and you get it in the mail every 10 yes. times a year. So you're correct. Talking and less than five, and full yes. access to the website.
And full access to the website. You can also subscribe just to the website for an even lower cost. So for the price of lunch, you can get the magazine that John O'Sullivan, the former editor of National Review, called the greatest cultural review in the world.
So give us a flavor. What are your, in the last couple of years, give us a flavor for maybe you personally, what are the two or three favorite stories that have been written in the new Criterion that you could share with us?
Well, I'll share, first of all, upcoming, we have an unpublished piece by Alexander Solzhenitsyn, which is kind of a coup. That's the great Russian novelist and political commentator. We're very pleased to have that.
Wait a second. Are we going to have to get the dirty cops at the FBI to investigate you here, Roger? Is this a Putin Russian secret agent?
This is a deep cover part of the Russian plot. Nobody knew that Alexander Solzhenitsyn was actually in cahoots with Donald Trump from beyond the grave. But there you are. It's, you know, reality is more stranger than fiction. We had a terrific piece on the Spanish Civil War in our first couple of years that really exploded a lot of the myths about the Spanish Civil War. I'm looking here at the June 2010 edition it's got a fantastic piece by the late Kenneth Minogue, a political philosopher, called Morals and the Servile Mind. It's every issue has pieces on art, philosophy, theater, political history. It's not a political magazine. We don't endorse candidates, but we occupy that strange space that the literary critic Lionel Trilling described when he spoke of the bloody crossroads where politics and culture meet. So we talk a lot about cultural politics. We talk a lot about what's going on in the universities, what's going on in the world of culture writ large. I think that your readers will find that the new Criterion is a refreshing draft of common sense that is definitely not woke and definitely not politically correct.
Well, that sounds good. So do you do book reviews? Because I want to transition to your other hat. Yes. So does the new Criterion do book reviews? And do you do book reviews for Encounter Books? And what other books do you review?
We do book reviews. We have a very vibrant book review section, in fact. My policy, however, is not to review the books that Encounter Books publishes, since I am the president and publisher of Encounter Books. Naturally, I think they're all pretty good. The one exception I made was Judge Robert Bork, was a frequent contributor to the New Criterion, and his last book, a memoir, was published by Encounter Books posthumously. But we did have Andy McCarthy review that in the New Criterion after that was published. But I wanted to avoid the appearance of log rolling in our time in the New Criterion, so we maintain a little bit of distance between the books that Encounter publishes and the books that the New Criterion reviews.
All right, so let's roll into Encounter Books. What are you all about? Obviously, you have your own website, encounterbooks.com. We'll put it on the screen. Just a reminder again, the New Criterion, what's the website there that people can go to either subscribe?
Very easy to remember, newcriterion.com.
Very creative.
Yes, I know. Well, we try to keep it simple. And the Encounter Books website is also easy to remember. It's encounterbooks.com. Well, Encounter has a very interesting history, actually. And my own history with it is sort of interesting. Before I was the publisher, they published two or three of my books. My book, The Long March, How the Cultural Revolution of the 1960s Changed America, and then a book about the academic teaching of art history called The Rape of the Masters, How Political Correctness is Sabotaging Art. But that was before I was involved with the House. The name Encounter comes from a magazine that was in England called Encounter. It was one of a suite of magazines that was started after World War II by something called the Congress for Cultural Freedom. And other magazines, there was Peruve in France, Des Monats in Germany, Quadrant in Australia. I believe Quadrant's the only one that still exists. Encounter was always the flagship. It traditionally had two editors. The founding editors were Irving Kristol and the English poet Stephen Spender. So very, very eminent people. I almost became the editor of Encounter magazine, actually, in, I think, 1990, 1991, shortly after my first book, Tenured Radicals, was published. I was asked if I would like to do that. And the condition was that the magazine, which was then suffering financially, would have to find some British money and an American foundation would bail them out. Well, that didn't happen. So the magazine closed and this American foundation bought the name, paid its debts. And then several years later, in 1998, they opened Encounter Books. They opened it in San Francisco. And just keep all of that in mind. Now, back up to 1967, Ramparts magazine, a wildly left-wing magazine, published an expose about the Congress for Cultural Freedom, which was the primary supporter of Encounter magazine and all these other magazines. And it revealed that the covert funding for the Congress for Cultural Freedom came from the CIA. There's much unhappiness in the New York Times, and many of the left-wing writers who wrote for Encounter magazine swore they'd never write for it again, and so on. It almost failed. Well, that was then. And Ramparts magazine at that time was edited by somebody called Peter Collier, a wild left-wing firebrand who, together with David Horowitz, was trying to bring down the capitalist structure of the United States. Well, they underwent a process of political maturation, Peter and David, and to such an extent that when Encounter Books was started, an older, wiser, more politically mature Peter Collier was tapped to be its first publisher. And when Peter retired, I was asked if I would like to do it, and I said yes, and that was in 2000.
So just the listeners understand, so the first editor of Encounter Books went through this transformation. Yeah. He was very left-wing, and over time became very conservative, so much so became the editor of Encounter Books, the first editor here in the United States of Encounter Books.
Correct. That's exactly right. And then after his process of political maturation, he took over Encounter. Then I was asked if I wanted to do it when he retired, and I moved it to New York in 2006, and the rest is history. We've had a string of bestsellers by Thomas Sowell and Jason Riley and Andy McCarthy. It's been a great run.
A lot of my listeners and viewers know Andy McCarthy because he wrote a very top-selling book called The Ball of Collusion. He was one of the first to bring out the legal problems with the Russia hoax, which unfortunately for the last 4 years I've been have to deal with every single day, 7 days a week. Yes. Because of all the dirty cops and the corrupt Clinton campaign and everything that all the issues that people that are listening to this podcast are very familiar with. So how many books do you publish a year, Roger?
Roughly 30, which is amazing, actually, considering the tiny number of people we have on staff. It's a very dedicated staff. Here's a shout out to the great people at Encounter Books. They work hard, and even in this coronavirus shutdown, we've done more this year than ever. So partly because of the coronavirus, we've published a lot of things around that.
Recently, I don't know, a month or so ago, we had on Julie Kelly, who has a great book out. Yes, tell us a little bit about that book.
Yeah, disloyal opposition. And it's all about the Never Trump movement. This strange phenomenon, actually, of people who used to call themselves conservative, but were so outraged by the advent of Donald Trump as president of the United States that they went insane. I mean, it's just extraordinary what's happened. If I were to tell you, Devin, that a certain president of the United States reduced unemployment to the lowest in generations, and for Black and Hispanic unemployment, the lowest in history. If I were to tell you further that he moved our embassy in Israel to Jerusalem, which people have been talking about doing for decades, that the stock market was at an historic high, that he had appointed hundreds of judges after the stamp of Antonin Scalia, that he had rolled back the regulatory state, and I could go on and on and on. It's a list of.
I want to add one part too. If you remember, all the Obama people and all the mainstream media, they said if you move the capital of Israel to Jerusalem, the whole place is going to blow up and be on fire. But now, just in the last few weeks, they've announced an agreement with one of the main Arab countries, the United Arab Emirates. Now they're going to have Israel and the UAE are going to have a normalization between each other, which has never happened. It's been unprecedented, and nobody could even think that could happen. So once again, what the mainstream media is telling people, they've been proven wrong again. You know, moving the embassy to Jerusalem actually had the opposite effect, where UAE said, hey, we want to be part of this too. We don't want to fight with Israel anymore. We want to get along, because UAE is actually, I've been there several times on my trips to Iraq and Afghanistan, and you know, we have, you know, significant presence there. They're a great ally. It's actually a very, very fascinating place. Small place, a lot of oil, a lot of gas, but the leadership there is really trying to, I don't want to say westernize, but they're trying to modernize and make the Islam religion what it's supposed to be, which is a peaceful religion, unlike what we've seen with the Iranian regime and Al-Qaeda and ISIS have tried to make it. Absolutely. So they're kind of an ideological oasis out there in the middle of the desert. Really an amazing accomplishment by the Trump administration. And once again, the mainstream media was totally ass backwards on
it. He deserves a Nobel Peace Prize. How many, let's have a vote of your listeners and viewers. How many people think he's going to get the Nobel Peace Prize? Zero? You're right. He's not going to.
That's not a scientific poll, but my guess is you're right.
But it's really, Julie did a fantastic job in this expose of the Never Trump movement. You know, people who are, I don't really understand it, because that list of accomplishments I just gave you is a conservative's dream list. You know, all of these things that he has done. And yet they say, oh, no, but he's a man of bad character. He tweets mean things. And so it's really a moment of public insanity.
Well, Roger, also the part that I think this might be news to some of the viewers and listeners out there. This movement is a political movement that's being funded by the radical left.
Yes.
This is not a Republican movement. They're former Republicans. They've decided to be liberals now, or they're just grifters, which my guess is most of them are just grifters. Whatever they're selling, Republicans aren't willing to pay for or buy, because it's garbage. And so they're being propped up by these left-wing billionaires to attack Republicans and the president.
Exactly. Julie, you know, has that down. She has all the details, chapter and verse, on who's paying for what. And it's extraordinary. As you say, I mean, it's left-wing billionaires like Pierre Omidyar, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, I believe he started eBay. And it's really quite extraordinary. I think that it's these Never Trumpers are so discouraged at being out of power, out of influence. They thought they were going to be calling the shots. And lo and behold, they're out in the wasteland now with no influence, and they don't like it. But that's one great book we've published recently. Another book, you mentioned Andy McCarthy's Ball of Collusion, The Plot to Rig an Election and Destroy a Presidency. That was a bestseller. One other book I want to mention is called Land of Hope, An Invitation to the Great American Story. This has been our bestseller this year, I believe. And the purpose of the book is to provide competition for Howard Zinn's anti-American People's History of the United States, which is, it's sold millions of copies. It's poisoned the minds of high school students all across the country. It's taught them that America is a bad place. It's taught them to hate America, to reject capitalism, to embrace socialism. It's a very destructive book. And I'm very pleased to say that there are several states that are considering adopting Land of Hope for their public schools. Many charter schools are adopting it. It's going to be, I think, a game changer. We're just bringing out a teacher's guide to it, which is an important thing. And we are also going to be publishing what I like to think of as Land of Hope Junior. It's actually, I think we're calling it for a young reader's edition for people who are in sixth to eighth grade. So it's part of our effort to revive the teaching of civics. Something else is coming up very soon is a book called 1620, which is about which is our answer to the New York Times's thoroughly disreputable 1619 project, which teaches people that the United States was born as a slaveocracy, and that the reason for the American Revolution was to perpetuate the institution of slavery. It's ridiculous, but it's not. This is being pushed by the New York Times. It's being adopted elements of the curriculum in 4,500 school districts across the country. It's a lie, and we hope to be able to counter that lie with 1620.
Well, being that my kids, my three daughters are locked in the house, they're not allowed to go to school. My wife is a third grade teacher. They're all doing Zoom school because the governor of this state of California has decided that local school districts that have elected officials, that they're too stupid, and that the Sacramento politicians need to decide what's best for our kids, which is, you know, really unfortunate. But I'm going to actually, my kids are probably, they can hear me right now. I'm actually going to buy Land of Hope. And hopefully the junior edition, maybe for my younger ones, but I think my oldest one can use Land of Hope. So you've talked about the new criterion. You've talked about Encounter Books. On Friday, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about a different form of book that I think is, because of the tech oligarchs that my listeners know well about, the tech tyrants, I've been very, very hesitant to put anything on the internet because it no longer is a free and open space. It is a closed space that's being heavily regulated by the extreme left, and it's poisoning the minds of millions of Americans. But you were onto something several years ago. You started something called the Broadsides at Encounter Books, and I'm publishing my Broadside with you that comes out here in a few weeks. But we're going to talk about that on Friday. So Roger, thanks a lot for being with us.
Great to be with you.
Thank you.
See you Friday.
Everybody, thanks for listening. It's Devin Nunes. Catch us in a few more days.
Thanks for listening to the Devin Nunes Podcast. We invite you to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And remember, you can download this podcast on iTunes or at devinnunes.com.
Storm clouds been gathering so long, I don't know.
The darkness around us leaves no easy road.
We started wondering if every road dead ends our dreams. It whips the dust up and rains pouring down.
Good people struggling in every hometown.
We've started wondering if we even matter at all. We'll take that hard road to happier days. First trial by fire like this.
It's nothing hard work and family can fix.
We've got the power to save it all here in our hands. We'll take that hard road to happier days. Cause we kept our American faith. Strong.
prayer and a purpose, we're already half the way there. We'll take that hard road to happier days, 'cause we've kept our American faith.
Paid for by Devin Nunes Campaign Committee.